Well, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're not going to video stream tonight because I still feel kind of like might go into coughing spasms. Although, I went to see my doctor today, and after waiting for 45 minutes, he came in the examining room, and he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I've got this bronchitis." And he said, "Tell me about it." So even my doctor had it. So, you know, I got what I went in for, which was a steroid shot, cortisone, and feel a lot better. There's no medicine you can take for this crap. We'll be off tomorrow night. Brad Friedman will be filling in. So thanks in advance to Brad Friedman. A lot of weirdness, more weirdness going on. Was Rush Limbaugh on the air today? Do you know, Kathy? You don't know? I have no idea. I think he was in Seattle. Cops are looking for somebody who robbed a North Seattle pharmacy at gunpoint. The incident happened about noon in the 1500 block of North 115th Street. The robber, who was wearing a mask, demanded OxyContin. Police said he entered the pharmacy through the front door and exited through an unmarked rear exit. He was seen driving eastbound in a silver or gray four-door Volkswagen Jetta that was parked on North 115th Street. The suspect is a white man in his 50s, 5'9", with a fat build. He also was wearing a black hooded sweatshirt, a black glove on his right hand, faded baggy blue jeans, and white tennis shoes with black soles. The man is considered armed and dangerous. Anyone with information is asked to call the Seattle Police Robbery Unit at 206-684-5535. So Rush Limbaugh is out stealing his own now. I'll be damned. Well, in a sense, except for the fact that you had a gun, that means you're in deep doo-doo, Rush. But aside from the gun part, good for you. It's good that you're stealing them yourself instead of sending your housekeeper out to steal them for you by meeting drug dealers in the parking lots of, what was that place, Kathy? Denny's Restaurants. Rush Limbaugh, loose in Seattle. Watch out, y'all. Nothing like somebody who steals OxyContins, does crazy Nazi talk radio, and is armed. There's a Republican candidate for governor in Alabama. His name is Tim James. He's the son of former Alabama Governor Fob James. Fob. We have funny names here in the South for our men folk, especially the ones who run for governor. We have funny names down here. Fob. That was the former Alabama governor. Well, his son, Tim, is now running. And Tim promises to do away with the foreign languages that are necessary in the driver's license exam, because Alabama, believe it or not, has become very international. And a lot of people want to work in those chicken factories. So 12 languages to the driver's license exam is presented in 12 languages to make it easier for people to get a driver's license, become a tax-paying citizen. Oh, but the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Tim James, he said no. He didn't like that.
I'm Tim James. Why do our politicians make us give driver's license exams in 12 languages? This is Alabama. We speak English.
Well,
if you want to live here, learn it. We're only giving that test in English. If I'm governor. Maybe it's the businessman in me.
Yeah.
But we'll save money.
Uh-huh.
And it makes sense. Does it to you?
It'll save money for us. Yeah.
It may just be the cynic in me, but does anybody else out there have the same feeling that he's maybe hampering the ability of his own citizens to pass this test when he says, "We speak English. Learn it."
Yeah. Y'all.
Shouldn't he be talking to, like, the school boards?
Yeah, well.
You know, what is the ranking for Alabama and their statewide English test scores?
Well, if it weren't for Georgia, they'd be last. Just pick one of them old states from the old Confederacy. They're always fighting each other to see who be last. Oh, Oh, Tim James. This Alabama, we speak English here.
It just cranks me up. Learn it. We speak English. Learn it. I mean, I feel like he ought to be, you know, going out and speaking in the public square or at the next teabag rally.
He probably will be.
Learn to spell it.
Yeah.
Look at your signs,
My daddy's name was Fob. That's English. Fob. Oh, Lord. Lord have mercy. This is Alabama. We speak English here. Mr. Tim, no, you don't. You really, really don't. Nobody in the South who is from the South speaks English. What is spoken here is a reasonable facsimile thereof, but it is not English. I defy you, Mr. James, to give me a definition from the English dictionary of the word y'all. Y'all, listen up here. I would like a definition of the word here. Listen up here, y'all. Whew. All right, the bankster business is really amazing. I got this thing today. It's from one of the bloggers over at where is Jackie blog at? MLive.com. A new study. I don't know if she's a blogger. She's a writer there. A new study from the Pew Research Center for the Public Interest estimates that the financial crisis that began in September 2008, engineered by the pigs you may have seen on television yesterday, that financial crisis has cost an average of $100,000 per American household. It's as if the average U.S. household burned $5,800 last year. That's according to a former Treasury Department economist Phil Swagel in a story on Bloomberg.com. That's how much each American household lost because of unemployment and lower earnings caused by the financial meltdown on Wall Street. But wait, there's more. According to the study, the average U.S. household lost $66,000 in stock holdings, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have a stock portfolio. It just means that where any type of fixed income that you have is probably involved in a stock portfolio somewhere. We also lost $30,000 in lost real estate value from September 2008 to the end of 2009 because of the financial crisis. Of course, that varies considerably across families based on their wealth. According to the study, the financial crisis in September 2008, quote, clearly exacerbated the pre-existing economic slowdown, turning a mild downturn into a deep recession. 5.5 million jobs were lost in the five quarters through the end of 2009 as a result of slower GDP growth. Of course, the human toll is harder to quantify, the study says. Millions of American families suffered losses of jobs, incomes, and homes, and the effects of those losses will play out on society for generations to come. The financial crisis of the past several years has had a massive economic cost for the United States. Trillions of dollars of wealth and output gone. Millions of jobs lost. Hundreds of thousands of families suffering hardships. These costs demonstrate the importance of taking steps to avoid future crises and the value of reforms that help achieve the goal. Meanwhile, the Republicans once again voted no today to hold open discussions about financial reform legislation. The Republicans want you to suffer. They want you to lose more money in your fixed income, in your investments, if you have them, in your job possibilities, in the value of your house, everything. Republicans hate America.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, the voice inside your head. Be careful of that. Got an interesting email from Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. And it's not really about anything that happened. She's the San Francisco school teacher. Nothing about her classes. But I found this very interesting. She writes, Mike, I've loved every single minute of your rants about the banksters these past couple of nights. It's been a real trip down memory lane for me. Nightmare Alley is more like it. Back in the early 90s, I took a job with the West Coast branch of one of those blue-blooded investment banks that populate Wall Street, J.P. Morgan. Up to that time, I had actually believed in the myth of the American meritocracy. You know the one. Anyone can succeed if they only work hard enough. It didn't take long for me to figure out that any sort of real opportunity at this institution was closed to my kind. You see, as someone who had not attended an Ivy League school and whose father did not have connections to financial bigwigs, I was shut out. The attitude of the banksters was, you went to a state university? Oh, that's nice. Now bring me a cup of coffee. Note, this was in 1994, not 1954. The reactions of those banking bastards to a major national event, the Oklahoma City bombing, and to the daily reality of poverty on the streets of our fair city showed me their ignorance of and total lack of concern for anyone outside their exclusive little club. We got the news feed about the Oklahoma City bombing over the Bloomberg machine, which was just about the highest tech way of receiving financial news back then. A bunch of us hovered around the Bloomberg monitor, reading the headlines as they rolled in. When one employee expressed that she hoped they would catch the people responsible, the number one bigwig said, well, if they want to find the person who did it, they need to tail him all the way back to Lebanon. He was utterly shameless in making this remark. It was clear that he did not expect anyone to call him on it. And, of course, he was right. No one did. However, after they arrested Timothy McVeigh a couple of days later, I innocently asked this jerk if he had been surprised by the news. He just sort of chuckled and waved his hand dismissively, which was typical of these creeps. I also remember the comments the bigwigs made about the many homeless people we saw every morning on the sidewalk in front of the building. They need to get a job. Well, are you going to give them one, Mr. Investment Banker? Everyone has to start somewhere. I had to start at the bottom, too. Your bottom was your freshman year at Harvard. Their bottom is the gutter of Market Street. I worked my ass off to get where I am, and if I could do it, anyone can. Really? Did working your ass off include checking the box on your Ivy League application indicating that you were a legacy kid? Or did you actually have to dial the phone for your dad when he made the call that got you this job? To hear these men, and it was all men, talk about their difficult slog to the top and how hard they were working to stay there, you would have thought that they had begun their journey in the grip of grinding poverty and were now exerting themselves to the point of sweating blood. One last anecdote. I will never forget the bigwig who threw a freaking fit because, get this, they had not provided him with the correct type of desk blotter. You see, managing directors, or MDs, as they were called, had leather blotters. VPs and below had synthetic ones. This guy had been promoted to MD and flipped out to the point of yelling and screaming when his new office contained a desk blotter made of synthetic material. As he ranted and raved across the corridor from where I sat, I remember thinking, this is the last straw. I have to get out of here now. And 2 weeks later, I did. In the end, I am grateful for having had this experience because it taught me how things in this country really work. It was also the final step in my transformation from having been a clueless college Republican to embracing my roots as a real San Francisco liberal. Keep giving them hell, Mike. No one deserves it more, except the Bush crime family. K. We all have very interesting journeys from there to here, don't we? Huh? college Republican. I've had dinner with Kay and her husband a couple of times. I never would have thought she was a college Republican or her husband. Kay and Jim, nice people. All right, we're about ready for a break. When we come back, we have today's missive from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, and a bunch of other stuff we're going to toss out. Again, we're not streaming tonight because I'm still a little bit on the edge about going into those damn coughing spasms again. It's hard to manipulate the camera and the microphone and everything when I'm hacking. Although, I truly recommend anyone who has bronchitis, you know, you can drink green tea until you're peeing green, which I certainly did, but nothing gets it like a cortisone shot. Before the hour, while most of the country's attention on geekazoid actions by state legislatures has been focused on Arizona, the nutballs in Oklahoma really slipped one over on their female citizens in that state. last week, I think it was last week, or a couple of weeks ago, the Oklahoma legislature passed a package of anti-abortion laws that are pretty bizarre. This post originally appeared on Hullabaloo blog site. Doctors are now allowed in that state to hide birth defects from pregnant women to curb abortions. They don't have to tell them. The post says women are just slightly dumb animals who need to be drawn a picture and lectured to like a four-year-old before they can understand what they're doing. That goes without saying, of course. But giving doctors immunity from liability for failing to tell their patients about fetal birth defects? The writer says that seems just a tad much for me. Sure, the dumb bitches can't be allowed to make their own decisions about taking on a lifetime of care or consider implications for their own health and well-being. What the silly little twits don't know won't hurt them, right? But you'd think that the important members of society, like insurance companies, employers, would have a stake in something like this. And here, this is the Oklahoma legislature voted overwhelmingly yesterday, to override vetoes. See, the governor of Oklahoma vetoed a couple of these bills because they were insane. The legislator voted overwhelmingly to override vetoes of two highly restrictive abortion measures. One, making it a law that women undergo an ultrasound and listen to a detailed description of the fetus before having an abortion. Though other states have passed similar measures forcing women to have ultrasounds, Oklahoma's law goes further, requiring a doctor or technician to set up the monitor where the woman can see it. And the doctor or technician then has to describe the heart, the limbs, and organs of the fetus. No exceptions are made for rape or incest victims. The second measure, passed into law Tuesday, protects doctors from malpractice suits if they decide not to inform the parents of an unborn baby that the fetus has birth defects. The intent of this bill is to prevent parents from later suing doctors who withhold information in order to try to influence them against having an abortion. Governor Brad Henry, a Democrat, vetoed both bills last week. The ultrasound law, he said, was flawed because it did not exempt rape and incest victims and was an unconstitutional intrusion into a woman's privacy. And he painted the other measure as immoral. Governor Henry said, quote, "It is unconscionable to grant a physician legal protection to mislead or misinform pregnant women in an effort to impose that doctor's personal belief on a patient." The Republican majorities in both houses, however, see things differently. On Monday, the House voted overwhelmingly to override the vetoes, and the Senate followed suit on Tuesday, making the two measures law. Oh, two other anti-abortion bills are still working their way through the legislature. One would force women to fill out a lengthy questionnaire about their reasons for seeking an abortion and then post statistics online based on the answers. And the other restricts insurance coverage for the procedure. It's astonishing what Republican religious bastards are doing to this country. It never stops. These are Republicans at work. It never stops. State legislatures, the federal government, on street corners, in the churches, in the civic clubs, these vermin just continue to impose their right-wing religious madness on their fellow citizens. And given a chance, they'll do it to the whole country. Now, Democrats are cowardly weasels. There's no question about that. Although all of a sudden Harry Reid seems to be growing a pair. But they're, for the most part, cowardly weasels. Republicans, on the other hand, are militaristic, religionist, fascist, Taliban-style, Al-Qaeda-like thugs who will beat your ass into the ground, take away all of your freedoms, impose God's will on you, and then stand back and say, "Now don't you feel better?" So which would you rather be governed by? Cowardly weasels or the other group? Me? I'll take the weasels, because I can always grab one of those weasels eventually and politically wring its neck and replace it with a timber wolf. Republicans, scum, swine, America haters, women haters, haters of people who are not white, haters of immigrants, legal or otherwise, illegal immigrants, my ass. Immigrants, period. People who can't speak English. Alabama-style English. Y'all, come over here. Come here. I want y'all to go out there in that there field. And I want you to pick me some of that cotton. All right? All right? Sir, I don't understand you. I said, all right? I don't know what all right means. Do you know what y'all means? Is that when you're on a boat and it starts to, you know, flip? What? That ain't what y'all means. God. What do you do with stuff like this, huh? What do you do if you live in a proto-fascist, religiously fascist country? And I say proto-fascist because I don't think there's been this sort of religious fascism imposed. Certainly not in this country. There have been attempts at various times to do this, but not like this. Not like this. Astonishing. If you're a woman and you live in Oklahoma, now if you're a good, submissive Christian woman, you're probably sitting back. Well, you wouldn't be listening to this program anyway. Your husband would come in and beat the hell out of you. But Good, submissive Christian women in Oklahoma are probably in deep and abiding agreement. Yes, I think the men in our legislature, every one of them, they know what's right. They do. So do I agree or disagree with passing these laws? Why, I really don't have an opinion. I'm an Oklahoma woman. I don't have any opinion about this at all. I am a Christian woman. I am a submissive woman. My husband is the leader in our family. Well, after God and Jesus. But I just don't have an opinion about that sort of thing. Abortion? Well, that should be removed. There shouldn't be one or any. Good God. "70% of lost manufacturing jobs aren't coming back," says the National Trade Group. The National Association of Manufacturers. And another extreme right-wing group who wants to destroy America. Only 30% of the 2 million factory jobs lost in the recession will be refilled, according to NAM. Of the 2 million factory jobs lost during the recession at U.S. manufacturers, fewer than 30% will be returning over the next 6 years, according to their estimate. Most of that hiring will come in 2011 and 2012. The remarks came from the association's economists during a job growth panel at the Milken Conference in Los Angeles yesterday, according to Bloomberg Businessweek. The National Association of Manufacturers, and they should know, forecasts a return of 500,000 manufacturing jobs by 2015, down from its previous estimate of 800,000. According to the Bloomberg story, forecaster IH Global Insight has a more optimistic outlook. It projects that more than 1 million of lost manufacturing jobs may be refilled, maybe, could be, don't know. During the job growth panel, the National Association of Manufacturers advocated a permanent research and development technology tax credit to help create jobs in the industry. The group also opposes federal charges such as taxes on medical device makers. Just thought we'd slip that one in there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ooh, dangerous. Excuse me. 10 before the hour. From Prairie 2, just fleeing. The Republicans in the Senate are backing down their just say no position on the Wall Street reforms after Harry Reid changed his vote to no on this morning's vote to open debate. By doing this, Reid is in a position to call for a vote at any moment, and he announced that the Senate would remain open for business all night. Republicans would presumably be obliged to attend or read about the vote in the morning. Normally, this sort of parliamentary maneuver is not seen in the Senate, but since the Republicans have already gone past any imaginary line of decorum that had existed, Harry is taking off the gloves. There's a growing sense of urgency to create a mechanism for dissolving the Wall Street banks as the world economy threatens to collapse. The Asian markets took another big dip yesterday as the Greek tragedy spread through Portugal and into Spain. with Standard & Poor's downgrading their debt a notch. Spain is in much better shape than Greece, but is also much bigger. Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain have all been drinking the Chicago School of Economics Kool-Aid to one degree or another. Nobody knows just how much peril they are really in, since it's unknown how much of their debt is hidden among complicated synthetic financial instruments created by, you guessed it, the Wall Street banksters. The Asian markets will open again this evening, our time, and if they don't accept the reassurances by the German government that everything will work out fine, then things could get ugly. The Wall Street banks have been using the interest-free money they have been getting from the Fed to pump up the markets by taking advantage of the carry trade. The carry trade is where you carry cheap money from one country into a country that offers a better return and enjoy profits with no real investment required. The risk to this is a sudden change in currency values, which could make you over-leveraged. That's Wall Street speak for broke. The sudden strengthening of the U.S. dollar as many people flee the sagging euro could be such a triggering event. The only way for an investor to avoid the worst happening is to sell off holdings at any price. This is called a market panic because buyers become scarce no matter how low prices go. The Chicago School of Economics says these things don't happen in a free market because there are no bubbles. They're still saying that and balk at any responsibility for the current depression and basically claim it's all in our heads. U.S. markets were up today anyway as the Fed confirmed that the free money will continue to flow to the Wall Street banks for some time to come. Gold was up worldwide with brisk buying. It's not everyone is fleeing the euro to the U.S. dollar. Some are just fleeing. PrairieNumeral2.com. Mr. Good News. You got to love the way he writes, though. Gordon in Oklahoma City. Mike, I'm sure you've already seen that Fox News has reported that Noah's Ark has been discovered by a group of Chinese evangelicals. Let me pause for a moment. Think about that last sentence. Fox News reporting that Noah's Ark has been discovered by a group of Chinese evangelicals. Oh, my God. Back to Gordon. To no surprise, this turns out to be just another fake Ark discovery. But before some creationist blames the debunking of the story on a bunch of godless, liberal, homo-loving commies, that person should take a deep breath and listen. This time, the exposure comes from another young Earth creationist and ark hunter named Randall Price, who is a professor at Liberty University. Yeah, that Liberty University. It seems our Dr. Price is all too familiar with this expedition of Chinese evangelicals. Here's the message from Dr. Price posted on a site that is familiar with Liberty University. This is Dr. Price talking, I was the archaeologist with the Chinese expedition in the summer of 2008 and was given photos of what they now are reporting to be the inside of the Ark. I and my partners invested $100,000 in this expedition, which they have retained despite their promise and our request to return it, since it was not used for the expedition. The information given below is my opinion based on what I've seen and heard. To make a long story short, this is all a fake. The photos were reputed to have been taken off-site near the Black Sea, but the film footage the Chinese now have was shot on location at Mount Ararat. In the late summer of 2008, 10 Kurdish workers hired by Parasut, the guide used by the Chinese, are said to have planted large wood beams taken from an old structure in the Black Sea area, planted them at the Mount Ararat site. In the winter of 2008, a Chinese climber, taken by Parasut's men to the site, saw the wood, but couldn't get inside because of severe weather conditions. During the summer of 2009, more wood was planted inside a cave at the site. The Chinese team went in the late summer of 2009. I was there at the time and knew about the hoax, and was shown the cave with the wood, and they made their film. As I said, I have the photos of the inside of the so-called Ark that show cobwebs in the corners of rafters, something just not possible in these conditions. And our Kurdish partner in Dogu Baba Ziat, the village at the foot of Mount Ararat, has all the facts about the location, the man who planted the wood, and even the truck that transported it. My God. Gordon, Oklahoma City. Jesus, Gordon, how can you be so funny and you and Bart Cop exist in Oklahoma? I don't quite understand that. Could you make any sense out of this? I couldn't either. That's what makes it so funny. Let's see, Chinese evangelicals and some Kurdish guides and then some Kurdish workers who went someplace and stole some wood. And then they took the wood into a cave. Now, the wood came from the Black Sea, and they put the wood in a cave near Mount Ararat. And then they went to the Chinese evangelicals and said, which is Kurdish for, good Lord, come and see what we've got. So everybody ran, and there were these wooden beams, and they're full of cobwebs. And the Kurdish worker said, see, which is Kurdish for, that's the ark. And the Chinese evangelicals said, which is Chinese for, wow, I think we just made a great discovery. So then the Kurdish workers and the Chinese evangelicals.
You wanted to see me?
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Just got an email from our homegirl in Chicago, Jennifer. And she got some breaking news for us. The Republicans abandoned their blockade against legislation to clamp tough new controls on Wall Street. Yeah, they cut and run. Yeah, they did. Which means that likely to pass... Passed would be the most sweeping rewrite of financial reform rules or financial rules since the Great Depression, according to, where are we getting this from? Huffington Post. Democrats and Republicans agree the Senate will ultimately pass landmark changes aimed at preventing a recurrence of the crisis that knocked the nation's financial system to its knees. The battle now begins over crucial details. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, said, quote, there's been immense pressure bottled up inside the Republican caucus through these last three votes where they all voted no. A lot of their members have been very deeply unhappy with the direction their leadership has been taking them. Better heads prevailed, end quote. Democrats had threatened to hold the Senate in session all night, making their case that the Republicans were stalling legislation of importance to virtually every American. The Democrats have been also been laying plans to make the legislation a major issue in midterm elections this summer and fall. The Republican retreat came one day after senior execs of Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs were denounced by lawmakers from both parties at a marathon Senate hearing. The Republican decision to relent came after Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama, the top Republican on the Senate Banking Committee.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Jeff in Louisville, Kentucky, listening to XM. All right, where were we?
I wanted to continue on here.
Go ahead.
When Ronald Reagan became president, the top six banks controlled 10% of the financial markets in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2008, the top six banks in this country controlled 66% of the market. Goldman Sachs sat down there today and pretty much told those senators, we still got the gun to your head, and we're going to do things our way.
Right.
And that's where we're at. Now, even though I don't like Mitt Romney, what he said made sense when he said, you know what, cascading bank failures are not in our interest. They simply got it set up. They've had the regulatory arm of our government for the last 30 years, these Wall Street executives, no matter what administration it be, whether Democrat or Republican, and they've set the laws, they've lined their pockets, and they got it set up for where they got a gun to our head that we cannot control them. That's what they've done. I mean, case in point, President Obama's Undersecretary of the Treasury for Code Enforcement on Wall Street is a former executive from Goldman Sachs. Hello, is anybody home?
Well,
nothing will change. Nothing will change.
Right. Right.
They got a gun to our head, Mike. They do.
Well, you know, there have been people within our society. We usually murder them, but there have been people in our society who have had solutions. Malcolm X did. Really, don't freak. Martin Luther King did. Possibly Bobby Kennedy, although I don't think so. Malcolm X had a quote one time, and he had lots of them, but this one, somebody sent it tonight, and I think I've lost it here. Whoever sent me that article about the last guy convicted, the last guy convicted in the murder of Malcolm X was released, or is being released from prison. That assassination going all the way back to 1965. I wonder when they're going to release Sirhan Sirhan. But if somebody remembers what that quote is about, capitalism and bloodsuckers. It was, damn it, I just had it here a few minutes ago, too. Oh, well. I get a lot of hate emails now because I've just decided to stop dancing around the issue. I guess I decided about 6-7 months ago to stop dancing around the issue of predatory capitalism, which is all capitalism, and how vile it has become, and how it literally is destroying not just the United States. I mean, it's destroying everything. And not just American capitalism, although it and Chinese capitalism is the worst, obviously, because both are hybrids of a capitalist, fascist kind of operating system. But the only way to end this, the only way to stop the destruction of this society, of any society, but let's focus on ours. The only way is to get rid of the system that's doing it. Why is this so difficult? I'm not talking about tanks rolling through the streets. You know, I offered up something months ago and jocularly referred to it as Malloy's socialism. Nationalize banking, energy, healthcare, transportation, and weapons production. And then leave small businesses and family-owned farms and high-tech firms and all sorts of startup businesses alone, as long as labor laws and environmental laws are followed. And the only reason we nationalize the weapons industry is to kill it, to strangle it, to murder it, to end it. I get a lot of emails from people that use the kind of language that I can't use on this program. You know, you effing SOB, you filthy piece of human SA, you know, if you don't like capitalism, why don't you go to Cuba? They're so stupid. These people are so stupid as their lives are being sucked out of them and their children and their grandchildren, as everything they thought was sacrosanct in this country is being absolutely chopped into mincemeat by capitalism as it exists in this country today. They still insist with their stupid ass tea bags and their stupid ass misspelled signs that socialism is the evil. My God, socialism is afoot across the land. You morons, you complete idiots, you dumbasses. No, it isn't. If it were, we would not be in this situation. Oh, Jesus. Why bother? Oh, man. Here's the quote. Yeah, I'll do it when we come back from Malcolm X. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's 25 before the hour. Michael sent me the Malcolm X quote here. Essentially, it is, show me a capitalist and I'll show you a bloodsucker. Here's the full quote from Malcolm X. It is impossible for capitalism to survive, primarily because the system of capitalism needs some blood to suck. Capitalism used to be like an eagle, but now it's more like a vulture. It used to be strong enough to go and suck anybody's blood, whether they were strong or not. But now it's become more cowardly, like the vulture, and it can only suck the blood of the helpless. As the nations of the world free themselves, the capitalism has less victims, less to suck, and it becomes weaker and weaker. It's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before it will collapse completely. It's something that used to make me stop and think about the possibilities of what this country would have been like had it been founded truly on the principles of justice and equality. In the first place, we would have begged for permission from the people who were already here to share their land with them. But we, like the Israelis, where it concerns Palestine, we, where it concerned the New World, we figured we had divine rights not granted to people who are already here. But had this country started out on principles of real justice and honor, had there been no genocide, had there been no slavery, and had the system, the economic system, maintained more or less the Jeffersonian model until this country became populated to the extent that the Jeffersonian model of the small farmer and the yeoman kind of idea could no longer apply unless everybody wanted to remain in the 18th century or the 17th century, which obviously we didn't, but a form of democratic socialism then would have been the natural evolution, except for the fact that we were founded in slavery and genocide, and we were founded in the ideas of predatory capitalism. That's precisely what slavery was about. Slavery was not so much about punishing an inferior race in the minds of these people, although the white people, although blacks or Africans were seen as an inferior race. But the primary reason for slavery was because it works so well in a capitalist system. If you can destroy your labor cost, if there is no labor cost, you can build enormous personal fortune. You really can, because in the 18th century, all you had to worry about then, if you had no labor costs, was the vagaries of the weather, or the chance that maybe a flood would happen and wipe you out, or maybe you would get typhoid, or some disease would get you. But as far as the economic system, as long as you had free labor, oh my God, and an unlimited supply. Now, granted, the white plantation owners had to buy the slaves, but once you made that initial investment, well, you know, you could breed them. So, if this country would have been founded on real principles of justice and honor and truth and decency and fairness, I used to play this head game with myself, thinking, where would we be by now, 230-some years into our existence? My God, it could have been. It could have been some sort of imaginary utopia. But that's not what we chose to do. We chose to butcher and murder the people who were here, and we chose to import other people as chattel, as slaves, as property. And our Supreme Court backed that up and said, no, 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 no. Property is property, sorry. They may look like human beings, but they're not. Not as long as they're property. They can't be both. Yeah. But capitalism now is at the point where, and I don't know why we all just can't look out our windows and see this, for God's sake. It is eating everything alive. It's like Stephen King's Langoliers. It's just devouring everything in its path. Everything. And it's run by a smaller and smaller cadre. Oh, the league of billionaires keeps getting bigger, but the ownership, the manipulator class is being reduced to fewer and fewer hands running this global economy, this global suck of resources and human lives and capitalism. And apparently the only way out of this is the destruction of the planet brought about by the further exploitation. You know, capitalism is what is that? It caused global warming. You disagree? Of course you do. You're a teabagger. You couldn't find your ass with both hands in broad daylight, you dumb freak. But I mean, reasonably normal people, is there an argument? Can anyone argue with that? What was the Industrial Revolution? When did this start? This pollution and destruction of the environment. When did it start? Huh? Take a look at London in the mid-19th century, when people were dropping like flies because there was no air to breathe. There was something, there was a suspension over London, but it wasn't air. And what was that about? Was that about cook stoves, or was that about the use of so-called soft coal by all the industries that were popping up, all the little nest of predatory capitalism that were beginning and expanding? And what about the Holocaust? What was that brought about by? Was that brought about by hatred of the Jews? That's what it was on the surface. But who funded Nazism? You know, who made sure that the death camps could run as efficiently as possible? Was that socialism that did that? Was that agrarian reform that did that? What was it that did that? It was one of the rawest forms of predatory capitalism, which is fascism. And we are there. And this is a part that would drive me to drink if I drank, which I don't. But it why don't we all, in a blinding Jungian moment of collective consciousness, why don't we realize this and make it stop? I mean, the dumb people are not going to make it stop. The trolls, the Beck followers, the Beck suckers, and the Obama cadre of Goldman Sachs people and the Rush Limbaugh eaters and you know, those kinds of people are not, you know, but I'm not talking about them. You know, they're kind of lost, aren't they? I mean, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how many countries sink beneath the rising coastal tides, no matter how many people die in mines and oil explosions, no matter how much pollution, no matter how many families and economies are tanked because of predatory capitalism, it just keeps going. The reason I don't think about it anymore led me to one inescapable conclusion. We're getting exactly what we deserve. If we don't have the goddamn sense to call the fire department while the house is on fire, well then, it'll burn down! I don't get it. I just don't understand why we don't do something. It's happening right in front of our eyes. And then you have this hearing today, where four or five or six or seven of the most visible predatory monsters in the history of the human race sit there and just give the finger over and over and over again to so-called representatives of the people, who are mostly bought and sold by the same people who are sitting there giving them the finger. It really is madness. And this is why I stay pissed off all the time. And then you have the protectors of the system, people like Glenn Beck, who eventually will probably kill himself. But before he does, he will cause so much damage, kind of like Jim Jones, will cause so much damage. And then you have Rush Limbaugh, who eventually will eat himself into a coma and die. But before he does, he will cause so much damage. Then you have Sean Hannity, who eventually will hang himself in his puppet strings. But before he does, he'll cause so much damage. Why? Why? You know. What can I lose if they try? I was looking for love like the very first time. Didn't realize love never left me. Contradicted, conspired. I can die and design. Nothing on earth could arrest me. Reception.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Mike is in Chicago listening online. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Good. I get off topic from what I was intended on calling on real quick.
Okay, sure.
Your caller earlier that had you defined to a T, who hasn't been listening to you since Chicago or IE America or anybody like that. Yeah, Mike, you're a big sellout.
Yeah, really. Absolutely.
The main reason why I called, I was it was kind of funny watching the hearing today and seeing John Ensign in that total role model of ethics from Nevada.
Is he still operating? He still sits on committees and asks questions of people?
Yeah, and he was, you know, kind of giving it to the Goldman Sachs guys and talking about their lack of ethics.
Yeah, right, right, right. You know what I think of? You know what I think of John Ensign, right?
Well,
I can't say
he's a Republican. So.
Right, I can't say it on the air, but you know.
Yeah, it's I don't know what to make out of it today. You know, so yeah, some of it's good. I don't know. Will it get enough play on the media? Can the Democrats work this to their advantage? I don't know. It doesn't seem like they ever take any political advantage.
I'll tell you what will happen in these hearings. The same thing happened with the Iran-Contra hearings, 20 years ago. Nothing.
Right.
Or 25 years ago. The information is out there. The American public. How many people in America have C-SPAN 3, Mike?
I have a satellite dish.
Right. And how many people knew that the coverage is going to be on CNBC? I'm in this business and I had no idea until somebody emailed me tonight and told me. I think it was Reg. Look, if it doesn't happen on television, first of all, it doesn't happen. It never happened at all.
Well, right. I think MSNBC or whoever you just said probably didn't know until the last minute, unless there was a big earthquake or a hurricane or something else they could, smear over it. But it was a slow news day, so
yeah. Well,
they
nothing.
They put it on.
I don't think anything will happen. I think they will write some legislation. They being the Democrats, they'll write some legislation that will somehow make its way through the Senate and the House, and Obama will sign it. It will be as effective to cleaning up Wall Street as the recently signed into law health insurance reform will be in providing health insurance for everyone in this country on the basis that we should be provided with it, which would be single payer. In other words, both are kind of a farce wrapped up in a hoax. Each one might do a little bit, a tiny bit of good if they were followed through on, maybe, but it won't be followed through on. As a matter of fact, the next Republican president will do everything that he or she can to completely dismantle everything that Obama has put into effect with his Democrat-controlled legislature.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with I'm still kind of holding out hope in the midterms and seeing if president that starts off with his control of the Congress and the Senate can hold on to it after his.
I hold out the hope too that more Republicans will be defeated and have their asses kicked out of Washington, and that more Democrats will make it into the House and the Senate. But that's only because, to me, Republicans are filth. And I don't like filth running my country. But given a choice, given a choice between Democrats and filth, I'll take the Democrats every time. Given a choice between Democrats and people who can run the country properly, I'll take people who can run the country properly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. I know you feel the same way. You know.
Yeah. And the other problem you have in this country is people like the guy who called you earlier that, you know, he knows everything but doesn't know crap.
Right.
And you run into these people all the time and you walk away and you shake your head. You can't believe how dumb people are.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're the suckers. So, you know.
I hear you. All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Mike. Have a good night.
All right. Take care. Kathy, I just got an email here. This is like the fifth person who's written to me. This is from Fogman, who wishes you luck on Thursday with your procedure. But he says, P.S., one tiny question from your website. Now, this is the fourth or fifth person who's written this. And he quotes on the website, Mike can now be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on affiliates from coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited plain. But you had spelled plain P-L-A-N-E, like airplane.
Who are you saying we? You wrote that copy.
I did not write that.
I didn't write that.
I
didn't write that.
So you
besides,
did.
I mean, it might be a very particularly banana-flavored 747. You never know.
Okay.
I didn't write it.
Would you do me a favor?
I'm not even sure I can edit it.
During the break at the top of the hour, would you change plane to plane? Oh. Oh. God, I have some... tight-ass viewer or listeners or whatever. No, but y'all are right. It shouldn't be that way. When I hate little tiny mistakes like that. That just, it's like a splinter in the bottom of your foot. You know, you're not going to die of it. Well, you could, but it'll just drive you crazy. Across the fruited plain, P-L-E-I-N. I did that? You didn't do it? Has somebody else been running our website? Did George do it? I bet George did. Let's blame it on George, our webmaster. Huh? I don't know. I don't know what page it's on, but you'll find it. Maybe on the affiliates page or something. All right, we have a break coming up here. I'm sorry. I'm talking about stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with anything except the personal travails of this 25-cent program. Stick around. Your phone calls when we come back, and I've got a couple other things I want to drop into the mix here. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Back to your phone calls in a moment here. Nora sent an email here. Hi, Mike. The ancient Roman patrician slavers would free their old slaves once those poor folk were no longer strong enough to do their master's bidding quick enough. As the baby boomers flood into their expected retirement years, it appears the current capitalist slavers have the same idea. They've taken away the job market and collapsed the economy. And in a way, we've been freed again to the point that we will beg for any job they'll toss us. Thanks for talking truth about capitalism. Unfortunately, so many Americans erroneously believe capitalism equals democracy and may never get it that one can have a democracy without a capitalist economy. Nora. Yeah, regarding what we were talking about before the break, if you are just tuning in. All right, I want to do a prayer to our economic affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, who uses the nom de plume prayer to living by the camper/bear rule. The stock markets worldwide took a 2% drop today on news that Standard & Poor's became the first bond rating agency to downgrade Greece's debt to junk status. They are suggesting that investors could expect to get back only 30 cents on the dollar they invested. They also downgraded Portugal's bonds, and there are rumors that Spain is next, despite the fact that those two are in good shape by comparison to Greece. The supposition is that Greece will take down several large European banks if they default. Germany is waffling on any sort of bailout for political reasons, and this is supposedly spooking the bond rating agencies. Greece is crying foul on their downgrade as no decisions have been announced. You should realize that these are the same ratings agencies that told European investors that the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations Wall Street was selling, were AAA rated, like U.S. Treasuries, when they knew full well they were nearly worthless. Junk bond status puts huge pressure not only on Greece to accept onerous terms from the International Monetary Fund, reducing Greece to corporate serfdom, but is driving all the world markets. The U.S. dollar is up sharply against the euro, and there are people on Wall Street making money from this. Back in the U.S., there was a brisk business in U.S. Treasuries driving down interest rates as investors apply the camper bear rule, which is the camper doesn't need to outrun the bear. He just needs to outrun the other campers. Foreign investors are betting on the U.S. as the fastest camper, but that by no means should be taken as a hopeful outlook on the U.S.'s chances. There are a lot of bears in the woods. The Republicans voted again today to block debate on the financial reform. They refused to allow public debate where they could present amendments, but insist loudly that the Democrats are somehow playing dirty by not making a deal behind closed doors. This is, of course, the opposite of what they are constantly saying about how legislation should be done. The flip-flop isn't just a delaying tactic. They know a bill is inevitable, and they want to claim in November that they wrote it. Public debate and amendments would make that claim impossible and would reveal every attempt they made to weaken it. They will follow their long tradition of claiming that they were looking out for the voter, as they were really doing Wall Street's bidding. Don't look back. The bear is gaining. PrairieNumeral2.com. This is from Peter. Mike, the hearings with the bankers today, as much as I was able to hear on the local sports radio station, got me thinking. The bumper you play, titled Good News Week, was put down, I think, by the hedgehogs. Maybe this name could be a description of the Goldman et al. Sociopaths, hedging and hogging as they continue to do. As for when the people, quote, quote, will hit the streets in protest of anything, consider the Mike Vick protests and deep angst in your area, Atlanta. While at the same time, the Chinese were killing, via poisoned food, far more pets than the quarterback ever could. Anyone picketing Walmart? Anyone awarded damages? Peter. I like emails that have a certain element of cryptic comment attached. You know what I'm saying? And then this, and then we'll move on here. Earlier this month, Virginia Governor Bob McDonald, the Republican, the guy that graduated from Regent University, the one run by Pat Robertson, he signed legislation allowing concealed carry permit holders to bring loaded handguns into establishments that serve alcohol. The law allows permit holders to carry guns in restaurants, quote, as long as the holders do not consume alcohol, end quote. Well, a leading Virginia gun lobby is now arguing that that law unfairly stigmatizes gun carriers as second-class citizens because there is an exception that allows law enforcement officers and Commonwealth's attorneys to carry concealed weapons and consume alcohol. Philip Van Cleve, leader of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, complained, "We're not allowed to drink, but the law enforcement officials can. That's two classes of citizens." End quote. But this bright, burning genius, Philip Van Cleve, has a solution. Van Cleve said one proposed bill would allow no one but an off-duty officer doing an undercover work to drink alcohol while carrying a concealed weapon. The other bill will say that anyone can carry a concealed gun and drink if they wish, as long as they're not drunk. The bright, shining genius Philip Van Cleve, leader of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, said, quote, "Whatever the General Assembly assumes will apply to everyone. Police officers and permit holders are all in the same tent. So I say, General Assembly, you choose. But whatever it is, we're equal." In a letter to the governor on behalf of the state's police chiefs, Virginia Beach Police Chief Jake Jaycox Jr. opposed the new law, arguing, quote, "Well, we can fully expect that at some point in the future, a disagreement that today would likely end up in a verbal confrontation or a bar fight will inevitably end up with gunfire if you sign this legislation into law," end quote. The chances of that happening would only increase if the Virginia gun lobby has its way. I mean, it's see what I'm talking about? This is, I mean... There is no rational reason, no logical reason, no reason that's based in anything positive that would say there should be no laws in the books regarding alcohol and guns. If you won't carry your weapon into a bar and have a drink, you should be able to do that. Because you know what? You might be sitting there having a beer and a Negro would walk in. And he would not have papers, even though you may stand up as a law-abiding American citizen and demand to see them papers. Or a Mexican person might come in with the Negro. Then what are you going to do? Because if the Negro is the law enforcement officer and the Mexican person is a drug dealer, well, then both of them will have guns. What will you do then?
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day. From the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming.
It's about 22 past the hour. Gene Robinson, writing in today's Washington Post op-ed page, refers to Arizona's new immigration law as an abomination. It is racist, arbitrary, oppressive, mean-spirited, unjust. About the only thing that can be said is that the legislation, which Republican Governor Jan Brewer signed Friday, the legislation goes so outrageously far that it may well be unconstitutional. Governor Brewer, who caved to xenophobic pressures that previous governors had the backbone to resist, should be ashamed of herself. The law requires police to question anyone they, quote, reasonably suspect, end quote, of being an undocumented immigrant. A mandate for racial profiling on a massive scale. Legal immigrants will be required to carry papers proving they have a right to be in the United States. Those without documentation can be charged with the crime of trespassing and jailed for up to 6 months. Activists for Latino and immigrant rights and supporters of sane governance held weekend rallies denouncing the new law and vowing to do everything they can to overturn it. But where was the Tea Party crowd? Isn't the whole premise of the Tea Party movement that overreaching government poses a grave threat to individual freedom? It seems to me that a law allowing individuals to be detained and interrogated on a whim and requiring legal residents to carry identification documents, as in a police state, would send the Tea Partiers into apoplexy. Or is there some kind of exception if the people whose freedoms are being taken away happen to have brown skin and might speak Spanish? He goes on. The Tea Party is nothing but a collection of racist bastards. Racist bastards. That's all they are. That's their organizing principle. Racism and a sick form of religiosity that Glenn Beck, the man who eventually will commit suicide, likes to pound down the throats of his guppies. Mike, I just wanted to bring a few things about the Arizona law. A friend from the UK just canceled her trip to Arizona. It was a little plan of hers to go to every state in the U.S. In the summer, she was going to Arizona, Colorado, and Alaska. Now she'll not go anywhere near Arizona. She asked me, what's to stop a cop from harassing her because of her British accent? Yes, she's blonde hair, blue eyes, but she does have an accent. What's to keep a police officer from giving her trouble because he doesn't like her walk or doesn't like her copy of The Nation? Yes, of course, we know who is really meant to cause problems, but how easily now will it be for someone to harass another person just for an Obama sticker on the car or even wearing a coexist T-shirt? Second, my husband brought this up. Wonder if a person has a right to ask a police person to produce their papers. If I understand my reading of the law, please correct me if I'm wrong, everyone needs to have this proof of citizenship. Yeah, I know. Demand those papers from the cops, and you'd see the inside of a jail, but it would be interesting to watch. Jen. Yeah, well, what's going to happen? You know, it's really going to be kind of weird. And there are all sorts of variations and permutations of this, but say an off-duty Hispanic police officer from Scottsdale drives down the street in Phoenix. And let's say he's got some music on that isn't exactly Chicago Symphony. And he's got the volume cranked up and he's driving along. You know, he's got his arm up on the side and hand on the steering wheel. This is a cop from Scottsdale, Arizona. And a couple of Bohunk Phoenix police officers see that. They don't know who this guy is. And they pull him over. And the Hispanic cop who just got pulled over thinks, I'll be son of a bitch. They got me? I'm a police officer. And that's just supposing the Bohunks come up to the Hispanic and get a little bit wordy with him. What do you think might happen there? What has happened to Arizona? What has happened to the state of Arizona? My God. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. before the hour. Michael writes, immigration bill, Greg Palast, thinks it's just another effort at vote suppression, given that the bill's author made mention of, quote, all the illegals voting, end quote. Palast has got a point. Arizona's been doing it for a very, very long time, voter suppression. We should not forget that a certain Chief Justice Rehnquist made his Republican bones chasing blacks and Hispanics from polling places in the early 60s. Yeah, so I guess it's not a recent breakdown with Arizona. Arizona has always been Arizona, right? Stephen is in Burbank, holding on forever. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
It was great hearing from Marge last night. Absolutely great.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
But getting to the point, it was these guys remind me of my little brother. He was allowed to have a credit card. He qualified. He got the credit card, and the way to get quick cash right now was the buddies at a, what do you want? You know, mm-hmm. and you go in and charge like a couch at a furniture store for $250, $50, you know. Whole kitchen sets, you know, go to the electronics store, the department
right.
store.
Right.
And so it looks like the way things are going, these guys, with the financial reform, not only are they going to get to keep that credit card, but it's going to be unlimited and they won't have to pay it back.
There you go.
But at least in this case, you know, after I moved to Burbank, you know, the feds in the form of United States Marshals were knocking at the door, you know, where is he? And I would tell them the truth, you know. Last I heard 3 months ago, he was in Idaho. And so things continue, you know. And a little caveat about campaign reform.
Yeah.
You know, get the money out of politics. Well, Nora said it, you know, and I had it in my mind to try and say it, and she stole my thunder. But the way I see it is capitalism hates democracy. And there's another little thing that I could add to that to take away from the analogies, you know, the old cliches and mm-hmm. you know, the metaphors. I saw a thing in the National Lampoon magazine a couple of years ago. And because I don't want to offend, you know, it's a little bit risque. I don't want to offend some of the more genteel members of the audience. So I'll try to send it to you in an email tomorrow.
Okay.
If that's all right with you, Bob.
That sounds good.
All right. Okay.
All right, Stephen. Thanks, man.
That's my rant.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, he's right. You know, think about the the history of U.S. international relations. Since the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, excuse me, you know, going back to the Spanish-American War, from that point forward, when we began to get entangled in the affairs of other countries, in spite of the advice by, was it Madison? Who was it that said, you know, don't do that? But if you look at what sort of government the United States not only backs but tries to install in various countries for the sake of predatory capitalism, it's always dictators. But they have to be right-wing dictators. If they're left-wing dictators, there's too much, excuse me, too much leftism there, too much possibility that a left-wing dictator would get all agrarian reformer on us and decide to nationalize all of our hard-won business ventures in these various countries. Every time that happens, oh, it's just, you know, that's what happened. That's what was going to happen with Salvador Allende in Chile. And Kissinger and Nixon put a stop to that. Man, didn't they, huh? They killed the son of a bitch and it took out a whole bunch of people with them. And then installed a right-wing, fascist, dictating regime that Kissinger and the boys could do business with. This is what we always do. We always do this, and we always lose. But if you think capitalism likes democracy, you're an ignorant fool. Capitalism wants a military dictatorship as close to fascism as humanly possible to do business with. Democracy is too... You know, the predators, the capitalists can't work with that because you never know. In democracy, you know, the liberals might get control of the legislative branch and then get all regulatory on their asses, you know. So they don't like that. No, we don't want regulation. Ooh, pew, regulations. The United States does business almost exclusively with dictators. That's just what we do. Because we're capitalist. Because we're capitalist. That's why. You know, we're not going to do business with Fidel Castro. Hell no! He ain't no capitalist! We back dictators. We install them. If it looks like a non-dictator is going to prevail in a so-called free election, we assist the dictator who's being run out of office in screaming, "Oh, the election was stolen! Oh, the election was stolen! Oh, my God!" As has happened in Afghanistan and Iraq, two places where we have spent an awful lot of blood and treasure in order to make sure that our capitalist interests are satisfied. Right? Now they're declaring that al-Maliki really was the winner of that election, so-called, in Iraq a couple of weeks ago. Huh? That's the way it works. And in Iran, back in the 50s, they had a democratically elected leader. Oh, no, 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 no. We threw him out. Guatemala, they had a democratically elected leader. Oh, no. It just goes on and on. How many examples do you want? You teabaggers don't have a clue what I'm talking about. Go back to go watch Glenn Beck. Get the hell out of my airspace, will you? Freaks. Dennis is in San Francisco listening on Green 960.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Dennis.
I've been in the financial business for 30 years, and the deregulation that started in the 80s got the ball rolling for the what I call the capitalist pigs, which is a throwback to the 60s. But I'm a capitalist. I got a business. But, the capitalist pigs want no regulations, right? They want no rules.
Nothing.
They want anarchy. And imagine if you had your highways without traffic laws, you know. Imagine what would happen then.
Sure.
So the attempt by Obama and the Democrats to roll back some of this deregulation is the last gasp. It really is. I think they just did, and I know this stuff from the inside, and I know what I'm talking about. They just raped the economy, the real economy, the productive economy, Main Street, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And if we don't roll back this greed, unbridled greed, this time, we're finished.
Well, even if we, I mean, how would, I'm not trying to challenge you, I'm looking for information here. How do you roll back unbridled greed?
With fair rules that are enforced.
But, yeah, I understand that, and that makes perfect sense to me. Fair rules that are enforced. But if there was to be such a system, why has that system not prevailed even yet?
Well, because God bless him, Clinton signed off on Glass-Steagall. Repeal,
right?
And then what was left, the Bush people simply looked at, I guess they looked at porno sites all the time, right, on the internet instead of enforcing the laws.
That's sounds like that's what they did. But
yes.
aside from non-regulation, right? Yeah, aside from Bush and Clinton, I agree with you. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush.
Did the SNLs, you know.
Right.
And that was a $350 billion cost to the taxpayers.
But we have been warned about this since Jefferson, since Madison, since Abraham Lincoln. These were presidents who specifically and clearly warned about the dangers of corporatism. That's not the term they use, but the power being concentrated in the hands of corporations. Eisenhower warned about it, although he was addressing specifically the military-industrial corporations. But my question, you know, what can be done about it? What can stop it? How we can't rely on members of Congress to do what? To pass laws? Congress is a wholly owned subsidiary now of corporate America.
That's correct. yeah.
So the only way to do it, I think, in a nonviolent way, is for everybody to just stop participating until the machine collapses. And then you rebuild, but you rebuild in a more just way. I know that sounds vague and kind of leftish, but I mean, short of just blowing the whole damn country up, which I'm not advocating, and I hate to even think about it. That's what the teabaggers and Glenn Beck are advocating. But short of doing that, what's the best way to replace this system? And that is if everybody stopped participating, just stopped. Thanks, Dennis. For the hour, Rich is in Eureka, California, listening to KGOE. Hey, Rich.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
I hope I can carry this conversation on. I have a bad cold, and so I don't want to get into a coughing jag. But
well, I've had one going all night.
And I don't want to get into a long diatribe, but I'm an Indian from an Indian reservation, and I kind of want to address this Arizona thing going on. I wonder how they'd like it if we turned the tables on them and ordered our tribal police to watch out for Arizona plates coming across our borders, because we are nations within this nation.
Right.
We're not subject to states.
Right.
And then pull them over, and then decide after pulling them over, I mean, if there are dark people in there, we might just ask them how long they're staying or how long they're passing through or whatever. But if there's whites, then we're definitely going to want to know if they have a tribal ID. Mm-hmm. Not an American citizen paper, but a tribal ID.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, I think we should throw them in our jails and charge them $2,500 to be exported back to their state of Arizona.
Sounds good to me, but, you know, who am I?
Right? I know. Right? I know it's not going to work, but
right.
I think they should think about it.
Yeah, but your point is well taken. I don't quite understand what the governor of Arizona thought she was accomplishing. According to Greg Palast, writing at Truthout, what they're trying to do is suppress the legal Hispanic vote in Arizona. There's like 100,000 voters that were thrown off the rolls, legal voters that were thrown off the rolls when this woman, Jan Brewer, who's now the governor, when she was Secretary of State a couple of years ago. So what the attempt seems to be is, you know, yes, it's racist and it's insane, but it's also an attempt to suppress the Hispanic vote. Now, if that was their goal, obviously it's going to backfire, because who of Hispanic descent will vote for a Republican in the state of Arizona now that this this racist Nazi-like law has been passed? So I just don't understand here, unless it's just the further breaking up of what we call the United States of America into the Federation of American States, which I think we're on the road to seeing, and probably in our lifetime, Rich.
Well, I agree, and it's a sickening situation.
It is indeed.
I'll let you go for this evening. You have my show.
Thanks, Rich.
You bet.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Ken is in San Pedro, California. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I call you every once in a while to remind you about why liberals don't have their own network. but that's a whole other topic. Anyway.
Well, you don't have to tell me. I used to work for the only liberal network in the history of radio broadcasting in America, and I watched it just slowly be devoured from mismanagement.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw out some nuances regarding this immigration law, and that is and regarding the Hispanic vote particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to throw that I'm not saying I'm blaming the victim in all of this. I'm just kind of facetiously saying that there is a silver lining in this, and that is that the Hispanic community is somewhat being united in this and unified in this and becoming active, which is exactly what needs to happen. They need to be active, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if, as a result of the backlash from this sort of thing, this thing creates backlash. Although I realize there might be some bloodshed, which is horrible. But getting to the Hispanic vote, you know, there is a percentage of them that voted right wing. You know, and a lot of that's being fueled by their bishops.
Yeah.
You know,
oh yeah.
Who
sure.
are telling them to vote right wing because they're against abortion.
Yeah, it all comes back to single issue voting, and you're absolutely right. How people of Hispanic descent are going to handle now, on the one hand, the political machine in Arizona declaring them to be the same as Jews in Germany who were forced to wear a yellow Star of David. On the other hand, you have their religious leaders who, when they are not raping their children,
right,
are now telling them that they must vote for the Republican because he or she is anti-abortion. Down that path lies schizophrenia. You know, by the busload, it would seem to me. So I hope maybe Hispanics can see how crazy the state is, but also how crazy the church is. Remember that maxim by Denis Diderot, who said mankind will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest.
And, yeah, exactly. And also, there will not be wars until there's, as long as there's young men willing to fight them. And I think this is the travesty, that there's a huge percentage of Hispanics in the military fighting for a country
yeah.
that's treating them with such injustice now.
Yeah, because it's a path to A, citizenship, B...
Which is horrendous, to have someone fight for a country that they don't even realize this treaty is going to treat them unjustly.
I've known several black civil rights icons here in the South by virtue of the fact that I live here who... who fought in World War II against fascism when they came back to this country from their the point where they disembarked to their homes. They had to ride in the backs of Greyhound buses because they were dark-skinned, and how that affected them. So, yeah, this is nothing new, that's for sure. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate you checking in. Didn't mean to cough in your ear there. Yeah, I'm still dealing with the bronchitis brought about by the allergies. What can I say? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
My worst day ever?